Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, July 5th. I'm Ray Graff. We welcome back dietitian nutritionist Nicole Rodriguez to the program today. Nicole is officially my favorite dietitian in the whole world. Full disclosure, I really don't move in those circles very much, but she's great, and she'll help us think about ways we can eat healthier with less waste and more taste. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email address. The number is 800-348-2551. Nicole Rodriguez, Summer of Cooking and Summer Food. That's good for you. Coming up. Oh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday, and joining us once again is Nicole Rodriguez. Nicole is an award-winning dietitian nutritionist based in the New York metro area. In addition to serving a diverse clientele via her telehealth-based practice, she is a self-described advocate. She's passionate about empowering individuals to feel good about the abundance of food choices at their fingertips and utilizing her co-hosting duties on the Food Bullying Podcast to do just that. If you have a question today, give us a call, 800-348-2551. It's healthy eating, something I know a great deal about. 800-348-2551. By the premise there, Nicole, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Well, you've been pretty busy, Nicole Rodriguez. You know, we're going to do a phoner today, and you came in anyway, and so thank you for doing that.
Heck yes. I'd love to come down to WAMC. How are you? Happy Friday.
Yeah, and how was your fourth?
It was really, really excellent.
Did you eat like a swine?
You know what? I actually did not.
Really?
I did not.
I'm not surprised.
I really took it easy really? Yesterday. Yeah.
Okay. So what was on your plate yesterday?
Are we allowed to mention local farms or
can
give allusion to?
As long as you're not making money off them.
I'm not, unfortunately, making a cent,
sure.
But day before last, I went berry picking at Indian Ladder Farms.
Oh, I love that place.
The best. Yeah. So I made a black raspberry crostata yesterday
morning.
What's
a crostata?
You know, I think it's just a fancy word for really high-intensity making pie crust. Because you think it's going to be easy to make, and then an hour later, you're crumbling butter through flour.
Yeah.
And anyway. But
do you have your mom's culinary skills? Because she's pretty much a genius.
No, I'm not quite there yet.
But you're good, right?
I try my best.
So let's talk about, I have some things I wanted to talk about today.
I was hoping you did.
Yeah, you know, I won't say names, I won't say networks, but there seems to be a plethora, an avalanche of pills they have a whole orchard and a whole farm in them. It's fruits and veggie pills, and you see them advertised, and I've seen people who take them. They don't look all that healthy to me, but what are they supposed to do? And in your estimation, as a dietitian, nutritionist, do they have any benefit?
How much time do we have on this subject?
We have
today?
As long as you want. The number here is 800-348-2551.
So, first of all, let's just logically step back and assess this situation.
Yeah.
Someone, certain company, maybe on a certain network, is saying, hey, here are these pills, which are, I don't know what, half an inch big, and take two of them and you're going to get a day's worth of fruits and vegetables,
yeah,
right?
That's like usually the Jetsons.
Right. We're not there yet,
darn
right?
It.
And I don't think we ever will be. But if we can just step back and assess that logically, even if we were to completely dehydrate that many servings of fruits and vegetables, so thinking let's just say like five combined cups of fruits and vegetables. Even if we were to dehydrate them, even if we were to grind them down, we're not fitting them into two capsules. So one, there's that. Secondarily, even if we were able to do so, what else are we missing when we dehydrate these down? What else are we missing when we try to attempt to get the goodness of fruits and vegetables in a pill form. Well, we're missing the living different phytonutrients, right? We're
going to be. What's a phytonutrient?
It's just a fancy word for a nutrient found in plants, right? And there are so many beyond just the vitamins that we're always talking about. What about the, you know, and a lot of them being water soluble, right? So now we've dehydrated these fruits and vegetables and put them in a pill. We're losing so much. What else are we losing? We're probably losing most of the fiber because I don't know how we got them that small, but
I don't know. Maybe okay. They're huge. I don't know. I've never seen one.
They're not. They're really not. So we have all of these like logical things we can consider before making a purchase like that. But also it speaks to this, I guess, this desire for a quick fix for everything,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
unfortunately, there's really not a shortcut in that way to meeting your nutrient needs.
Right. Well, I mean, if it worked, I'd be ordering them. Because it would save me a heck of a lot of angst. I mean, I'm not the you know, veggies are not always my favorite thing.
Are vegetables causing you angst or anxiety?
I have both, really. I'm racked with anti-veggie sentiment.
From the produce department.
No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
800-348-2551 if you want to complain. Nicole Rodriguez is our guest today, award-winning dietitian, nutritionist, and thinking about calories, too. We did a fun drive, and it went into the second week, and it was a lot of work. And I'm yapping away, and our listeners stepped up, and we raised a lot of money, and it was great. But it was taxing for those of us who were on the air. Very taxing for the people who had to listen to it. But it was also taxing for us who were making the ask. If you are, and I got thinking about this because my mind wanders, does working your brain burn calories?
So,
in other words, just thinking about things.
So when we're talking about our caloric needs, right? Like we have the caloric needs that will keep our bodies functioning and up and running and doing what it has to do in the absence of physical activity, right? So yes, we need calories to stay alive. We need calories to think. We need for all our processes to be firing. We need to be taking in nutrition. Unfortunately, those different things are not producing a significant burn of calories in a similar fashion that different modalities of physical activity would. But I will say, do you know your brain specifically, its preferred source of fuel?
Bourbon? No, I don't know.
Yes.
Yes. Zach says yes. That's the correct answer.
Carbohydrates.
Right. Oh, okay. Good.
Okay.
Yes.
So what you might experience sometimes is if you have a day where you feel like you're working really hard, it's a strenuous day for whatever reason, and you feel a little bit foggy or you feel a little, let's just say, like unenergetic.
Yeah.
It might be good to assess, well, what has my carbohydrate intake been during this day? And if I'm trying to do life on very low carbohydrate, that can mentally be challenging.
I love that you brought up carbohydrates because going back as a fatty since a youth, there was always the discussion of calories and carbs and all these things. And my mother was like, you got to cut your calories. Oh, well, then the next month you got to cut your carbs. To you, dietitian, nutritionist, an award-winning saint of a person, what's more important to be watching, carbs or calories?
I think it depends on what is your goal, and are you in some kind of specific disease state? So if your overall goal is weight loss, then you are probably wise to watch your overall calories and what that looks like. Now, is there, of course, nuance there? Absolutely. Should we be maybe focusing on carbohydrates that are more complex in nature and focusing on fewer simple carbohydrates under those circumstances? Yeah, absolutely. Now, that being said, there are people who feel better playing around with where their carbohydrate intake falls during any given day, and there are maybe people who feel a little bit better, say, like once they have an idea of what their protein needs to be. There are some people who might feel better with a slightly higher fat versus carbohydrate intake, right? So everyone is a little bit different, but when we're talking about this kind of like pyramid of what's important, if we're talking about weight loss or weight maintenance, like, yes, at the bottom is what are my total calories? And then like the split of what protein, fat, and carbohydrate should be, that's really secondary.
Why are carbohydrates so satisfying? Why are they satisfying?
My question to you is, why are they really satisfying?
Yes, they are. Why, so, you don't believe that's the case?
Well, if you have carbohydrate in isolation, so say you just have a piece of bread, how satisfied are you really?
Depends on the bread.
With no butter, no nothing on it. You might just have a piece of bread, walk away and be like, and feel great an hour later.
Of course. Of course. I don't like this line of questioning. Zach, we're going to take a break. Nicole Rodriguez is our guest. She's a dietitian nutritionist. She's here to help you, and she's also here to answer my stupid questions. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And at some point, we'll be back. We're going to break for some underwriting. I guess we've been having a couple technical snafus this week. And so, there it is. Okay, well, I'll just stop talking right now. Go ahead. I love that Ronnie Earl. Boy, what a player. Guitar there. It's down at JJ's, Zach. Is that the name of that one? What is that one? Lunch at RM. I knew there were some letters in there. 800-348-2551. That's our number. It's dietitian nutritionist Nicole Rodriguez with us. Again, what's the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist? I forget.
Well, to become a nutritionist, you can maybe complete some kind of 1 week, 6 week, whatever length of time program. You don't have to go in person or anything of that nature. And you can basically get a certificate that says, I'm a nutritionist. Of course, there are programs that are way more involved than that, not to diminish, you know, the potential
right
for better programs there. But it can be as easy as like, hey, I signed up for this mail course and like, here I am.
Right? Can you imagine if I did that?
You could do. I think we should do it
as
an
experiment.
I humanity. Think we should do it
no.
as an experiment. So to become a registered dietitian, you have to complete, well, it used to be a bachelor's of science in nutrition. Now it's a master's. And then after that, submit to complete a 1,200-hour supervised program.
Yeah.
And about half of us who apply actually get into one of these programs. So you do that and then sit for an exam, and then you can call yourself a registered dietitian, and then every 5 years complete about 75 hours of continuing education credits as
okay
well.
And presumably, I know you're very youthful, but presumably you've had to do this at least once with the every 5 years thing, right?
I've had to do it once,
okay,
yes.
At least
I have
once.
To do it, yes.
Okay.
Times are coming, yes.
So do you learn anything new, or do they— is there anything new under the sun that you have to be caught up on?
The options are really limitless, because food is a topic that people are always talking about and research is always emerging, or there are different specializations that you can take courses in, like, you know, diabetes, obesity, things of that nature. So there's always opportunity, and then there are different conferences and things where there are breakout sessions with, professional credits to be earned from different experts. So
interesting.
It's actually pretty fun.
You know, I'm glad you brought up diabetes, because when somebody gets diabetes, the endocrinologist or the primary care doc or whatever says, look, and again, getting back to carbs, you're watching your carbs, and you can have those carbs as long as you eat a bucket of kale or something that has a lot of fiber. What's the connection between the two? Why does fiber counteract the carb-heavy thing that you just ate?
Right. So why do we tell people to eat things like oatmeal, right? I'm sure you've heard things like that. It's not just, you know, all of these.
I'm not saying
all of these different things, because fiber helps to blunt that blood sugar response, right? So fiber is, when you asked before, like, oh, carbs are so satisfying. Like, fiber is one of those things that's actually satisfying and actually has some of those different functions that you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I want to kind of reel back into what you said about, oh, you can have your carbs, but it has to be with this or that. So you might have heard people saying something like, oh, I'm diabetic, but now I have to have brown rice, right? I'm sure you've heard something like that, because, oh, brown rice supposedly has a little bit more fiber. That's not even necessarily the case. It is kind of, as you mentioned, well, okay, I'm going to have my carbohydrate of choosing, whatever it may be, but one, what is the amount? Two, am I combining it? And am I not just combining it with fiber, but ideally, am I combining it with fat and protein as well to further blunt and regulate that blood sugar response? And I would refer to people, I am not a certified diabetes educator.
Correct. Oh, no, I didn't want to imply that.
Oh, yeah. However, what a lot of people find really helpful if they're looking to just regulate blood sugar in general, or trying to get a little bit more of an eye opener of like, okay, what really counts as a serving of carbohydrate, is the diabetic exchange list.
What's that?
So it's a, can look up diabetic exchange list. It comes up as a PDF, and it's a list that tells you pretty much any food, and it's broken down into groups. It's broken down into like a meat group, a vegetable group, a grain group, etc. And it tells you like what counts as a serving of carbohydrate. So like if I want to have banana, like how much banana is going to serve 15 grams of carbohydrate, and then that's considered a carb serving, is that 15 grams, right? So of course there are going to be people who comfortably have obviously more than one carb serving per meal, but if you want to regulate throughout the day and get a handle on like what's what in terms of carbohydrate, it's a really, really helpful list.
Nicole Rodriguez is our guest today. It's Diet and Nutrition on this Food Friday. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. A couple of emails here. We'll get to them in a moment. VoxPop@WAMC.org. When you were training for this line of work, you spent some time in Europe, yeah?
No. But I spent a lot of time in long-term care facilities. Spent time working with different food groups that created menus for different restaurants, spent a lot of time in the New York City Department of Health and Human Services system doing different programming with them, working with, you know, programs like WIC and different things of that nature. So a lot of different programming in and around New York City.
Yeah. Well, okay. Maybe I had that wrong. Maybe my wife told me that you were in Europe. I don't know. But the reason leading me to this, Americans, you know, we eat a lot of processed junk as a whole, not you particularly, but as citizens of this country, there's a lot of processed food eaten. In your estimation and in your studies and in your experience, what nation or what area of the world does it best and is healthiest and is happiest and is perhaps not as portly?
Well, one, can we talk for a moment about some different reasons we might be so portly also?
We can, if you answer my question.
Yeah, it's not just what we're eating. It's a lot of how we're eating and compared to different places. So you asked what places really do it best. And there's a great book that outlines all of the different places that do it best, and they're referred to as blue zones all over the world. And, you know, they're in different places in Japan, different places in Europe. Actually, I don't know if it's San Luis Obispo, but there is a community in California that's considered. So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, what they take into account is what percentage of this population lives till they're more than 100. And a lot of the similarities that they find in these different communities that are all over the world, it's not just what they eat. And yes, they have that focus on fiber. They have a focus on consuming a lot of different vegetables, grains, right? Things of that nature. But they also have a more relaxed lifestyle. They view food through the lens of community, right? So they're not rushing through meals. They're sitting down for meals. They participate in joyful movement. They make the outdoors a part of their everyday lives. So yes, we can look at these places and say, oh yeah, their diet's really healthy. They're considered a blue zone, but it's not just about the food. Mm. It's the culture surrounding the food, and it's how they're eating the food too, which is really huge when you think about it, right? Whereas yeah. I don't think you could really say that we're doing any of those things very well by and large in the United States.
Yeah, you're probably right. Nicole Rodriguez joins us today. It's Food Friday, Diet and Nutrition Today. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Okay, this one's from Amanda. Can you give a couple of suggestions what foods to avoid if you have kidney stones?
What foods to avoid if you have
kidney stones? If you can't answer that, don't worry. You're not a medical doctor, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably want to take an entire look at her diet. One, because there are probably many things to be avoided in that disease state, so I'm not really particularly comfortable saying what are we going to do for kidney stones.
That's smart. Donna in Albany wants to know, I have high blood pressure and high cholesterol. I'm dieting to lose weight and improve my numbers. Any suggestions for high protein, low sodium and cholesterol breakfast meals? And that's from Donna in Albany.
Okay, so we have high blood pressure.
Yep, high cholesterol.
And we have high cholesterol, right?
Right. So you want to avoid the sodium if you can, right? And then cholesterol.
Yeah. So what are we talking about when lowering cholesterol? And it's, you know, some of it goes hand in hand with blood pressure, but when we're looking to lower cholesterol, we're looking to increase our fiber, we're looking to increase our movement, and then of course we're looking at different sources of protein that are, responsible in terms of our cholesterol intake. So, yes, are we looking at things that are lean and looking at things that don't have all of this, like, visceral fat? And then, yes, maybe looking at some plant-based options that are also fibrous and things of that nature, right? But also, as far as breakfast for someone like this, that doesn't mean that you can't have a non-fat or low-fat, high-protein yogurt product. And then maybe to add on extra fiber might be saying, like, hey, have that with something like a cup of berries, and then maybe layer on some heart-healthy fats, because that can also have a positive influence on her blood cholesterol, maybe doing some like slivered almonds or something on top of that.
Talk to me about heart healthy fat.
Is
the body of knowledge on this changing at all, or is the good fat still the good fat?
Yeah, I think right now we're still looking as good fats being good fats. I think there's a big misconception, though, that all plant-based fats are healthy fats, and in particular, we have to isolate out coconut from that conversation, because coconut is actually the most saturated fat.
Okay.
So we are looking at things like olive oil. We're looking at things like avocado. We're looking at things like our nuts and things like that as great sources of heart healthy fats. And then yes, doing our best to minimize our fat intake from animal sources. Doesn't mean we're not consuming animal products, just being smart about it from a fat perspective.
We're joined today by Nicole Rodriguez. It's a Food Friday. Nicole is a dietitian nutritionist based in the New York City metro area. The number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go up to Queensbury. And Nicole, you're on.
Hi, Nicole and Ray. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You bet.
And happy Friday.
To you as well.
My question is about what Nicole's thoughts are on intermittent fasting. So, like, for example, eating for 10 hours a day and fasting for the other 14 hours a day as a means of glucose regulation and metabolism regulation.
Okay, what's the latest on that? That is talked about off and on for long periods of time. What do you know?
Yeah, that's a great question, Cole. So by and large, we can utilize intermittent fasting as a tool for calorie restriction, because if we're looking at our day and saying, okay, well, I can only eat between X hour and this hour, if you're someone who tends to snack after that hour that you've now set a goalpost around, yes, now we can say, well, we're creating some boundaries there that will hopefully lead to calorie restriction. As far as glucose regulation and monitoring and other things you might have heard, like autophagy, the jury is still kind of out there and it's still too soon to tell. However, I will say if it's a lifestyle that just feels good for you, then I think there's actually a lot of value there. And I know a lot of people who have used it really successfully, and whether they're monitoring their blood sugar or not, feel really great setting a specific set of hours during which they're eating and not eating.
Cole, you want to follow up?
No, that's pretty much what I heard. I just kind of wanted to hear it from the expert. And it's something that I've been kind of like playing around with the last few months, and it seems to be working for me. And so something that I'm looking to carry on with. And so I kind of just wanted to hear the expert opinion on it.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Now, Nicole, your many clients, do you ever say, okay, you're right for this. You should try intermittent fasting.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
None of this is a one size fits all. You have to take into account what's my lifestyle, what are my preferences, what are my different triggers. So, yeah, for some people, intermittent fasting might work really well. Some people like to have those boundaries, and I'm all for supporting it if it works for someone.
But do you do it?
I have done it in the past. As a rule, I try not to eat too close to bed just because it doesn't feel great.
I do
advise my patients, if they can, to take a short like 10 or 15 minute walk after their last meal, or even if they're unable to take a walk, just to be moving around a little bit and not going right from, you know, dinner to the couch or dinner to bed. Because when you think about it, you know, bodily movement enhances your digestive process as well. So it's not a bad thing to move around a little bit after we're eating.
You know, one of the things we have talked about, and when I go to your website, you're very big on the moving around, very big on the exercise. And how do you sort of figure out, okay, how much exercise does this person need? Everybody's different.
Everybody's different, but
here we go.
We do know that sitting down is the new smoking. I will get behind that statement. That's a very popular statement, is that we should be, again, taking it full circle back to what we were talking about with American lifestyle, right? We should be getting up and moving more. So instead of being really prescriptive about it, I really encourage people, wherever they are, take a something over nothing approach, right? Especially if you're just starting. If you're doing literally nothing and you feel like you're literally at a desk for almost 8 hours straight a day, well, what's really something small you could do? All right, I'm going to get up and go to the water cooler twice today. I'm going to get up and go see my coworker instead of sending an email or a text or whatever the case may be. And then looking for these little opportunities to move, I find that most people find that more achievable than going from 0 to 60 in a day, right? That's not really fair to say, oh, you're doing absolutely nothing and I need you to now be doing 45 minutes of XYZ four times a week.
That's a recipe for a quick heart attack in the wrong situation.
That could be true as well.
Yeah. All right. Nicole Rodriguez is our guest today. How much exercise do you do a day?
Depends. What are we counting? Are we counting like workouts and walking? Depends.
Listen, you're talking to the wrong expert here.
I try to make sure I'm walking for 65 minutes total every day.
65 minutes in the New York metro area.
General walking.
Yeah, okay.
And then there's weights piled on top of that 3-4 days a week, but early in the morning.
Nicole Rodriguez joins us today. It's diet and nutrition and fitness and all that good stuff. 800 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Let's grab one more call before the next break, and we go to Del Mar, New York. Adam, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is about getting enough protein on a vegan diet. I've heard that if you combine grains with like beans, you get a complete protein. And I try to eat beans. I mean, I try to eat a grains every day, but I eat like beans maybe like once or twice a week. So I wanted to ask, is that enough beans, or should you be eating beans like every day to get enough protein?
Great question, Adam. So when we're looking at a vegan diet and protein, we want to look first at, we have two different complete sources of protein in the vegan diet, one being soy in all of its forms and the other being quinoa. So one, if you're open to things like edamame and tofu and soy milk, those can definitely help meet your needs. But when we're looking at some other plant-based sources like your beans, yes, we do want to be combining something like beans with a grain to make it a complete source. So if you feel as though you're, one, maybe not consuming things like soy and quinoa on a regular basis, that it might be wise to increase your bean consumption. And when you do so, combining it with a grain to make a complete protein. And I will also say sometimes on a vegan meal pattern, some vegan people might benefit from having some kind of vegan protein powder incorporated into their diet. And there are so many more options of those available now than there were even 5 years ago. So you could definitely meet your protein needs on that diet. It just takes a little bit more planning.
Adam.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Do you know, like, I get conflicting information, like how much protein does someone, like, do we really need? Because some people say it's really high, like over 100, and some people say 50 grams. Like, how much protein would someone need?
That's a great question. Of course, that's on an individual basis, depending on your activity level and some other factors. But when you're, and there is a great range there, but you can look at something called the acceptable macronutrient distribution range, and that should be very helpful in assisting you in getting a pretty good idea of sort of like a lower level and top level of what your needs could be.
All right, Adam, we got to take a break here. We're overdue. 800-348-2551 is our number. Nicole Rodriguez is our guest. It's Diet and Nutrition and You, and we'll be back. Oh, yeah. Frank West sure could play the flute. That's Thad Jones, Frank West, Tiptoe, 800-348-2551. You know, Nicole Rodriguez, 90% of the music that I listen to is dead people. Isn't that a shame?
That's about where my percentage is at, too, actually.
But still, the music is timeless. It's wonderful. Well, it's great to have you here. Let's go back to our phones, and let's go to Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, you're on.
Hey, Ray.
Hey.
Hey, Nicole.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes. I realize, Ray, I probably have said this before, but I thought it would be an appropriate program.
Okay.
Redo it. You know, I just recently realized that my problems with digesting my food and getting heartburn and, you know, acid and digestion, whatever, heartburn and all that kind of thing we used to call it, that I wasn't chewing my food thoroughly enough. I remember my dad saying when we were kids, chew each mouthful of food 24 times. So I started chewing my food more thoroughly, and I've no longer had that problem.
Oh, that's great.
And 10 more words of wisdom, not my wisdom, but from people from all different periods in history and different places on the earth. It all boils down to the first six words: the closer to nature, the better, and in all things, moderation.
All right, I think you're on to something there. Nicole, what do you have to say about chewing food?
I just want to say not only is that great for digestion, However, it also forces people to slow down a little bit, and it gives your brain a little bit of time to catch up with your digestive tract. So actually, Jim, for my patients who have a weight loss goal, this is something I'm speaking about very frequently because, again, when we're slowing down the cadence of our meal, we can probably end up by the end of it consuming fewer calories and maybe even leaving a little something on the plate. So, Jim, that does resonate deeply, and I think it's valuable for all of us to be chewing more thoroughly. Also, because that's where digestion really starts. Of course, mechanically, our teeth are breaking up the food, but also chemically with different enzymes and things of that nature. So you will do yourself a great service by chewing your food more thoroughly. Thank you, Jim.
Jim, thanks a lot. Now, if weight loss wasn't an issue, and maybe you had bad digestion and chewing food helps, could you get the same effect by buying pre-chewed food?
There's a million-dollar idea for us.
You know? What do you do?
Why are we still sitting here when we could be chewing food?
Well, somebody already just stole our idea. All right, let's go to Kate in Amherst, Massachusetts. Kate, you're on.
Hi there. So many people have relatives in long-term care or nursing homes, and the pureed diets are just awful. Is there anything families can do to help improve the really tasteless and textureless diet?
Kate, that's a tough one. I feel for you. We were just talking about time spent in long-term care, and unfortunately, it is really challenging to get in and change a nursing home diet, right? Because when they're doing that puree, it's happening in the kitchen, right? It's not happening just like outside the door. And then 9 times out of 10, there's a probably pretty serious reason if we're on a mechanically altered pureed diet. Yeah. And to potentially put something else into that mix gets risky with a textural change, because then we might have a swallowing issue, we might have a choking issue, and of course, like, everyone's needs are different and things are on a case-by-case basis, but I definitely would caution against changing the composition of that diet if that's the texture someone's on, unfortunately.
Kate.
Yeah, I'm a longtime nurse, and people just stop eating, and I don't blame them. The stuff is awful.
That's really tough.
Kate, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Nicole Rodriguez is here, dietitian, a nutritionist, an all-around pal to this program. Let's go to South Hadley, and it's Joanna. You're on.
Hi. Thank you. This is a great program. And, Ray, I love your jazz picks.
Thanks. Oh, thank you.
I've been vegetarian and on and off vegan for a long time. But the most drastic change I made in my diet was when I really became aware of the Environmental Working Group, EWG.org, and they publish lists about the pesticides that are found on vegetables and fruits and in grains versus organic. And that's really made an impression on me. Hmm. Are you, do you have thoughts about organic versus traditional?
Okay, fair question. From a dietitian standpoint now, not necessarily a social standpoint or anything else, but any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I refer my patients to something called the Safe Fruits and Veggies Calculator. You can go to safefruitsandveggies.org. And basically what this will allow you to do is, you know, say, Joanna, you wanted to see what's your pesticide residue risk for something like strawberries. And you can say, hey, I'm a woman, and it will tell you, I'm an adult woman. It'll tell you how many servings, not how many strawberries, but how many servings of strawberries you would need to consume in one day for pesticides to pose any sort of health risk to you. And I think it's really great that, the numbers there are really, really surprising. And this is taking into account the highest allowable level of pesticides. So we're really getting, like, the highest number that we possibly can. And really, we'd have to be eating I think tens of thousands of strawberries in a day for us to be at any kind of risk. So I advise my patients to make decisions based on their budget, based on their taste preference, and also knowing that when we're coming from a nutritional perspective, the data is insignificant as to higher nutritional value on organic versus conventionally grown produce. But again, we all have choices for a reason.
And there are reasons to do that if that's your thing, Joanna. And there are some great organic growers in this region and around the country. And
yes,
we've had
indeed many
of them on this show. And so thank you very much for that. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Nicole Rodriguez is here. Before we get to the next one, how's the podcast doing?
Podcast is really great.
Food Bully.
It's not out yet. Actually, the latest episode is really interesting. I would encourage people to give it a listen. It's all about the impact of dollar stores on the nutrition of different socioeconomic groups. We know that dollar stores are the fastest growing retail segment.
I saw that post. That was so interesting.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting conversation with someone who has done that research. And it's surprising that there are many instances in which being able to shop at a dollar store, one, has its benefits in and of itself, but second, can have a positive impact on the choices that that individual might make when they're shopping at the big box store or at the supermarket.
I thought that was great. I don't know where I saw it on social media because I don't have too much left.
I have it on LinkedIn.
That's what I saw.
LinkedIn.
But I mean, just to take that angle, I never would have thought of that. So that is Food Bullying. And how do people find that podcast?
That is really anywhere you consume podcasts. We're on, you know, we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify.
Yeah.
Anchor, I think. Yeah, we're on all those different places.
I don't want to give the false impression that I actually heard the podcast, but it seems like a great idea. All right, let's go to Julia in Greenfield, Mass. Julia, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit about the role of sugar in diet and how it affects the body, because I'm a sugar hound, and I think I need to hear this.
I love sugar, too. I am all over that. So what does it do to make you feel so dang good?
I love sugar too. And when we're talking about this from a dietary perspective, I mean, there's a lot of nuance here, but the general rule is to say that about 10% of your overall calories can be used for what we would call discretionary calories, like those from added sugars, right? So if you're someone who really loves to have a sweet, it might be valuable to take a look at added sugars in your overall meal patterns during the day and maybe ask yourself, well, if I'm consuming a lot of added sugar during the day, can I maybe sort of shuffle some of that over to me having like an actual treat, like an actual dessert? Is that something that might work for me? And now on nutrition labels, that's become really easy to discern because that added sugar line is on the nutrition facts panel. So we can really determine how much we're getting throughout the course of the day. And for some people, taking the taboo away from sugar can be really helpful instead of trying to chase alternatives to get that sweet fix.
Julia, I got to say one thing, two things. One, Nicole Rodriguez is a very fit individual, but we did a Halloween show a few years ago, and she brought candy. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nicole, but it's all about moderation and knowing when to say when.
I think it's about moderation, and also just on that subject of watching your added sugars throughout the day, if you make a concerted effort to hit your nutritional needs during the day, minimize added sugars, and I'm not saying this is just like wave a magic wand and it's so easy to do, but if you start making that effort, then you might find that when you do sit down and have something that has sugar in it, you might be like, ooh, this is a lot sweeter than I remember. And, oh, now I can have less quantity of this and still be satisfied. So it's all a work in progress, but it's not a matter of just eliminating sugar from your diet.
Julia,
that usually backfires.
Thanks for the call. Let's go now to Cohos and RK. You're on.
Hey, Nicole. Hey, Ray.
Hey.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Now, Ray, I trust next week it'll be the cheeseburger and onion ring show, provide proper
equilibrium. Ooh, I'm coming back for that.
Now we're talking, brother.
Coming back for that.
All right, fair enough. You're invited. All right, go ahead.
All right, man. Now, Ray, tomorrow night I plan to go to a certain establishment of Italian descent in Troy, order a couple pies, wash it down with some of that vodka cake, our friend has over there.
Oh, Rocco's joint. Okay.
But here's the thing. Now, here's what I do. Now, today, I will basically eat practically nothing. Now, when I say practically nothing, coffee with a little milk, maybe a little sliced turkey, but basically no more than 200-300 calories for today, because we're in for a big time tomorrow. So I want to ask the expert, Nicole, is that approach damaging in any way?
Great, great question. All right, what do you think?
It's a great question. First of all, that all sounds delicious.
Oh, yeah.
When we say damaging, I guess my question is, how do you feel the day after you go to this pizza place and consume that volume? There is nothing inherently wrong with this pattern, but
I feel awful, by the way. The answer to your question, I feel awful.
But it's worth it.
So if
it certainly is, Ray.
Yeah, I hear you.
So if I can suggest what, might be an approach that feels a little better is to maybe eat somewhat normally today, somewhat normally tomorrow before you go to this establishment. But when I say normally, maybe again, have a couple of meals that are a little bit more nutrient dense, maybe a little bit lighter on fat, maybe a little bit lighter on simple carbohydrates. So focusing on that kind of like power triangle of protein, fiber, and a little bit of heart healthy fat. So you have satiety, and then see how you feel when you get to this pizza place that sounds amazing. And maybe not everything gets consumed, but maybe, again, you're able to sit down and really enjoy it and still enjoy it and savor and eat, do the whole eat, enjoy, and move on, but possibly consume less of it and feel
nice.
Better the next day.
What do you think, RK?
I was all there, Ray, until she said possibly consume less of it. I don't.
Well, listen, before I let you go, man, what's going to be on the pies?
Well, I like to do a straight-up cheese.
Okay.
I do a straight-up cheese, but then I'll do a pesto. So we do the two small,
That pesto.
The two small pies. And I'm hurt. Yeah, I'm hurt.
Beautiful,
by 10 o'clock, I'm gonna be in a coma of a pizza coma.
Well, don't be in a real coma, but thank you and enjoy it, man. Thanks for the call. It's funny. He can still eat a lot. I don't know how old he is, but as I get older, they put a pizza out. Maybe it's election night. We're here in the newsroom. I can eat a piece. That's it. I can't. It fills me up. Is that normal for old age?
It is. Well, let's not call you old age,
well,
but
pretty
it
much.
Is. But it is normal as we get older to have a slightly diminished appetite.
All right. So I don't feel so bad about it then. Hey, listen. We're about out of time. Nicole Rodriguez, if people want to find out about what you do, and you do a lot of remote work. Since the pandemic, you've been doing a lot of seeing clients remotely, yeah?
Yeah, I see many, many patients remotely through various insurance networks, which is great. So if you think you might like to work with me, you can email me, nicole@enjoyfoodenjoylife.com.
You are great. Thank you for being with us. I know you've been pretty busy today, so a beautiful job. We're all done.
Thanks for having me.
Support comes from Del Mar Farmers Market, their 16th season, providing local and organic produce, prepared foods, and fair trade crafts. Saturdays from 9 to 1 at Bethlehem High School, 700 Delaware Avenue, delmarmarket.org. Herzog's Garden Center, Kingston, specializing in hand-selected trees, shrubs, perennials, annuals, and tropical and flowering houseplants from sources throughout the Northeast. Herzog's.com. And Pioneer Valley Food Tours, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering walking and bicycle food tours that explore local food and beverages from source to table. PioneerValleyFoodTours.com. Once again, thanks to Nicole Rodriguez for being here today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. Sorry if we didn't get to your call or your email. She'll be back again in a few months or so, 3 or 4 months. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Nice job, sir. Nice shirt. Thanks to Barb King, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. We will see you Monday at 2 p.m. for a Medical Monday. In the meantime, have a splendid and safe weekend.